So we're doing this again, Father Christina. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad you're still welcoming me. You haven't sent me to purgatory.
No, I haven't. We'll leave that up to God. That's his judgment, not mine. So
good.
Last week, lighter topic compared to this week, because I want to bring up something that I feel like some of the parents of young children, high school students, junior high, they may be experiencing right now. And it's a heavy topic for many parents and a real thing. And it goes something like this. What would you say to a parent whose child comes to them and says, I want to transition, or I'm having feelings and that I'm trapped in this wrong body and I feel like I need to do something. I need to start dressing a certain way to correspond more so to how I'm feeling. And the parents are now maybe surprised by this and they don't know how to respond. So what does the church offer us in order to be able to respond to these struggles that some young people are having?
Mm-hmm. Well, before I even get into what the church offers us, I think the first thing that the church offers us, or offers parents specifically, is the reminder of their very noble vocation in sharing in the very parenthood of God Himself, right? That in being co-creators with Him, in bringing new life into being and raising new life, that they are participating in the first and primary way we come to know God, which is as our Creator. And so the church is reminding parents of the tremendous dignity that is theirs in the in their vocation as Christian mothers and fathers. So that's the first thing that parents need to remember, is this immense honor that they have. But that doesn't make it any less burdensome. There is no parent who would not be able to say that they have experienced the raising of children to be a heavy burden in their life. And burdens aren't bad. And that's not saying that being a parent is bad, but there is no way around it being heavy, precisely because of the greatness to which parents are called. From a Catholic perspective, we'd say that parents are being asked to raise future saints. And so I, as a not biological father, I can't even begin to fully appreciate that calling. I just stand in awe of it, really. Now, when a child were to come to their parent and say, I think I need to transition, or I think I'm the wrong gender, I would say not even, you know, a theological response to that, just a human response, I think it would be to remain calm. I think parents need to think through, okay, if they've already been through this, you can't go back and change the past. Anyone who's watching this right now, you can't change what might have been your immediate reaction if you've had this conversation with your child. But you cannot expect that this will never happen to you if you haven't had this conversation with your child yet. We are living in an extremely difficult, confused, and confusing moment in human history. And so parents, I think, should brace themselves for this potential eventuality. So if you have not had this conversation, already now try and prepare yourself to imagine hearing something troubling like that from your child, and try your best to let your immediate response to be that of love. Embrace them. Thank them for having the courage to tell you that. Thank you. Thank them for their bravery in opening their heart and soul up to you in a way that probably is very scary for them or confusing for them. If our first response can be to assure them, I love you. What you've just said does not change how I have always already felt about you. I think that establishes, hopefully, a relationship of safety, where the child then says, okay, this is who, this needs to be the primary person I go through this time in my life with. Because there are evil forces conspiring against the singular role of parents in the lives of their children by suggesting that children need to be protected from their parents. And so they need to be safe to tell a teacher or a school administrator or their friend and not their parents. This is appalling, right? And so parents need to reclaim and hold fast to that unique role they have in their child's life, to welcome them with love and with patience. As shocking as it might be, if we can try our best to withstand that shock, maybe go to your room later that night and let it out there in private, I think there's a much higher risk or higher chance of the child continuing to come to you first, and a lesser risk of them opening up to someone else who simply will not have their best interest in mind, especially if they're the ones who are promoting this almost like an agenda.
I love what you said about the response of a welcoming, loving response, because it does seem within the schools, or in certain schools, almost this divide between a child and the parent, and almost in some schools even having a policy that if the child discloses their preferred pronoun to the school, then if the child doesn't want their parents to know, then the school now says, well, we'll not tell the parent. And I just think, man, that's such a devastating thing to the parent-child relationship. The parent, my children, like no one loves my children more than me. Like in this world, they're my responsibility. And I just feel it's almost such an evil thing to separate a child from their parent and keeping that door open. But so a child maybe feels like, okay, they're trapped in the wrong body, or they have feelings and they want to change, let's say, physically something.
Puberty blockers.
Thank you. Is that ever permissible? Is it ever allowable according to what we know about the human person and the church's moral principles?
So I will speak to that, but I want to go back to your first point about the audacity of a school policy or administrators to imagine that they somehow have the responsibility to stand in between a child and their parent, to protect a child from their parent's reaction on this extremely sensitive and complicated matter. A person utterly detached from the future of that child, unlike the parent, who will remain intrinsically attached to the future of that child, to imagine that they could intervene in a way that is somehow better for the child is, well, as I said before, it's audacious that they would ever even imagine such a thing. But it speaks to an even deeper problem. If you think that this child isn't safe to disclose this very sensitive detail about his or her life to his or her parents, what evidence do you have that that child is at risk in other ways in their home life? And why is that not being addressed? So if you think this child is not going to be safe to tell that to their parents, why? Do you believe that the child is already being abused? Do you believe that the child is already being neglected? Do you have evidence? Are you seeing them come with bruises on their bodies? If so, this should not be the one thing that you keep from the parent. If you have reason to believe that that child is going to be mistreated or abused at home, then you've already dropped the ball in seeking to intervene for the well-being of that child. But if you don't have reason to believe that, if you just are making an assumption, how dare you imagine that it's your place to stand in between that child and their parents, when until that moment you have no previous awareness of or evidence to suggest that that child would be in danger at home to share that with their parents, and safer to tell you. I'm not saying that there are no situations where that wouldn't be the case. But if that is known, if that is suspected, then that should already be being addressed, apart from the question of this child's gender dysphoria or confusion, whatever it is that they're going through. So I want to make sure that we clarify that, so that we don't say that there is absolutely inconceivably a scenario where it would be unsafe for a child to bring that to the home life before they brought it outside of the home life. I do concede that that is a possibility. But if that's a possibility, then that should be being addressed well before a question like this would come up. And then I would wonder, has something about that led to this question coming up? But that's another topic. So just to clarify that, I think is important first. But now to return to what you asked about this question of intervening chemically or surgically at a moment in a child's life when they are admittedly more distressed about themselves than they've ever been before is unconscionable. The church cannot and does not have the words to express strongly enough, at least in her teaching, let alone the questions that should be capable of being resolved by medical professionals, that this is not the moment to make that kind of, in some cases, irreversible physical or chemical intervention in the life of a child. And the very word that we're hearing all the time, transitioning. Transition requires there to be a movement from one state to another state. That suggests you go through changes in your life. So if you're going through a change right now, that means you've already had in your short lifespan a change from this state to this state. Well, what's to suggest that if you leave things as they are a few years down the road, you're not going to go through another change? You already have evidence that shows you go through changes in your life outside of you controlling what's happening there. To intervene at this moment and say, this change signals an incontrovertible or an irreversible intervention, that is just illogical. And it certainly does not suggest sound medical science, because the evidence would suggest that you're already experiencing transitioning. So why not just wait and see what continues to unfold down the road?
And the change that some would propose is a permanent one on a young child's body or a teenager's body. I just look at my children. They change their mind all the time. I suspect this is not going to stop. I change my mind all the time, but what we're talking about is a radical change permanently that affects one's ability to have children in the future. Can you speak to the dignity of the human person and how this is contrary to the dignity of the human person to transition?
Yeah. Life is a gift by definition. And that is because you did not bring yourself into existence. You were not consulted about your being, and we are not consulted about keeping ourselves in existence. And so there is fundamentally a disposition of humility that must be assumed, which says, okay, I am not the author of my life. Now, in the last 80 years, 90 years, we've gone through a dramatic philosophical development in Western thought that has reversed our understanding of our being, right? It's often the school of thought is often referred to as existentialism, where we have now said, I don't exist as a consequence of an essence that has brought me into being, in this case, a human nature. I come into existence, and then I make for myself whatever essence I want. And that reversal has had catastrophic consequences. I don't think anyone would even be aware that they're thinking in those terms, but that, way back, the writings of Jean-Paul Sartre in the 1940s and 50s, that has directly contributed to where we are right now. That I've decided this about myself, and so I'm going to change my being. This is an attack, an assault against being. While we are not consulted about coming into existence, there is another element of that that does not only just require a response of humility, but it also requires a response of awe, of being awestruck that someone beyond myself wants me to be. If I didn't bring myself into existence, then someone like me has brought me into being. And if I have been brought into being, perhaps I should stand back and consider that the manner in which I've been brought into being was part and parcel of the desire to bring me into being. Who I am and how I am was foreseen in the decision to grant me existence. And so if we seek to reverse or redefine or undermine our very essence, our very being, that is a rejection of the gift that we are so dignified to possess. Now, I think some people might say, well, I find the gift of my life miserable and burdensome and confusing, and I'm not grateful for it. And I accept that that is the experience of, I don't know if I should say many, but certainly not a negligible number of people do experience life as a heavy burden. And so then I think the question to that must be, the answer to that reality must be, what are we all doing to come together around those who experience their life as a burden and affirm them that their life is a gift to us as well? Their life as they are, not what they make themselves, but as they are now, is already a gift to me. So though you may find your life a burden to you because of whatever struggles you're facing, you are a gift to me. And to convey that to someone, I think, is essential.
I could hear maybe a child saying, but I feel a certain way. I don't feel like I'm a gift. I will be happier if I make a transition. I will be happier if I start dressing in the opposite sex. I'll be happier if I identify with a different pronoun. You're making me miserable. Why are you not allowing me to be happy? This is cruel.
I would put the question back to saying, why do you think you're unhappy the way that you are? Let's go backwards here. Okay? You're going through a transition that has brought you to a moment that is at best causing you some distress, if not outright confusion and inner chaos. So whenever we find ourselves in a situation like that, we need to walk back and say, what led to this? How did this happen? Where did this come from? And so I think instead of looking ahead to a future that I know nothing about and make decisions now that are irreversible about a future that I'm only projecting will be better and happier for me, I better look backwards and say, what has happened that's led me to this moment right now? What's gone on in my life? I can't help but think of a story from my childhood. My mother ran a day home. And so there were many other people's children always in my home growing up. And there was a boy who came home from school one day into our house, and he sat down on the stool and he just looked miserable. And my mom asked him, what's the matter? And he said, I wish I was a girl. Now, if that happened today, I think right away we'd say, oh, we have a transition situation on our hands. We need to surround this child with all our resources and prepare them for whatever and tell them their options, blah, 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 blah. My mom said, why do you wish you were a girl? And he said, because my dad says you're not allowed to hit girls. Well, through more conversation, we came to discover he was being bullied at recess. He was being picked on or pushed around or whatever. And so my mother talked to his parents, and I don't know what ended up happening. But imagine if in that moment my mom's solution was, oh, well, let's go pick you a dress out of my daughter's closet, and that'll make you feel better. It seems to me that we're living in a moment where we think the right thing to do is have that automatic reaction, instead of just asking the simple question, what's going on here? Not in an angry tone, not in an accusatory tone, just saying, what's led to this? What's contributing to your train of thought? We need to step back and have serious conversations. Now, those are not always possible because there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in this. And now we're living in a moment, speaking of irreversible changes, where society has so dramatically shifted that I think it's making having this kind of conversation next to impossible in the first place. We're just not open to conversation.
How did we get here? Because I feel like when I was growing up, going junior high, high school, this wasn't even a conversation. I don't think people really could have imagined how it could be now, how widespread this is, or even like the choice of pronouns. I don't like my pronoun. I'm going to pick another one because I feel like it fits me better. And it's a constant rotation with some of these things too. For example, the pronouns, one thing one day, another thing another week. It's hard. And within the schools, now the teachers have to keep up with this too and be continuously sensitive to every ever-changing identification with someone in the classroom. None of this was like this before, and it seems, I would like to know your thoughts, but as we've went through 2 years with COVID lockdowns, it seems like there's an acceleration now that we've come out of lockdown and mandates. It seems like there's just more, all like a different gear. What do you think about that observation? Am I right or not about that?
Well, you're absolutely right that it has accelerated. I couldn't have ever imagined we'd be where we are right now. I've been ordained 10 years. So even just in the 10 years of being a priest, I could never have fathomed we'd be having the conversations that we are right now. But I think it's the failure to have acted decisively earlier on, always out of this perpetual fear of being too hard or too scary or too inflexible, right? I just had a conversation with a person who is a teacher chaplain in a Catholic school, where they had to have a conversation with their administration about requests that were being made for children to have a kitty litter box in the bathroom at their school, because there are now children who are saying they identify as cats, and they want to go to the bathroom in the same way as their cat does. And they actually did this. They put a kitty litter box in the bathroom of the school. until the administration intervened, and then they said, well, come, this is getting ridiculous. That's a line too far. We will not do that. And my immediate thought was, now it's a line too far? Because the child thinks they're a cat? It's a line too far? When it wasn't too far that the child said, I was born in the wrong body, I have the wrong sex, my sex doesn't match my gender. Who taught children to think in these terms and speak in this way? But now it's a line too far. No, the problem is you don't put the toothpaste back in the tube. We have pushed this so far out of the realm of rationality that we're only just starting to catch up with what we've done. But if you're wanting to be consistent, there is no end to what should be going on here. And I don't know what it's going to take for people to wake up and smell the coffee, but it's urgent because children are going to be making, without parental consent, soon enough, without parental consent or involvement, children are going to be making irreversible decisions about their mental health, their emotional health, their physical bodies, their hormones, and they can't imagine now what they will be facing later. So the line too far was a long time ago, not just now that kids want to urinate in a kitty litter box.
In Canada, especially particular parts of Canada, we have publicly funded Catholic education. Catholic school systems have to deal with this. We have some wonderful teachers in the Catholic school systems, and there's also some problems within the Catholic school systems. And I just want to say, I want to celebrate those good teachers who try really, really hard to promote the faith within the church. I've met many of them. There's many great leaders out there. Also, but I think the battle is there too in Catholic education. Can you give a word of encouragement to those teachers or administrators regarding this and how to respond?
Don't let anyone tell you that you do not love your students. That's what I want to say to those teachers. Do not accept anyone telling you that you do not love your students. You know if you love your students. Now, you have colleagues who have convinced themselves that they are also loving their students by having gender-affirming, or whatever the category is, treatment of or care of their students. And I also don't doubt that they believe they are loving their students. But now is a moment for us to step back and ask ourselves, as I have often heard you say in talks in the past, what is the next loving thing to do? And is the next loving thing to do for me to promote, celebrate, participate in an irreversible decision in this child's life when I will know them for 6 to 8 months and potentially never see them again? As a person completely detached from their life except for these few months that they're in my classroom, is your involvement in that earth-shattering decision in their life a place for you to intervene in that way? I think teachers need to ask themselves that question. And the teachers who say, no, I've decided I cannot and will not have that role in the lives of my students. For those 8 months that they're in front of me, I will just love them, give them attention, listen to them, support them in their academics, instruct them in what I have been mandated to instruct them, which is reading, writing, math, science, arithmetic, not gender ideology. No teacher has been given a mandate for that.
Okay, Father, I want to go back to the initial question. Parent has a child, is asking to transition. People like a yes or no answer. You know, should a parent say yes to their child's request when that child is within their care, living at home with them?
As I said at the beginning, I am not a parent. I cannot presume to tell parents what they must do in the raising of their children. But as someone with a philosophical and theological background, I cannot say that there is any circumstance in which the church can foresee parents cooperating with their child's decision to undertake this course of action. There's a variety of different hormone treatments, puberty blockers, surgical procedures. We cannot. For all of his reputation for being very open-minded and even very progressive, Pope Francis has spoken out very emphatically on this question of gender ideology, as he repeatedly refers to it. And so if I, as a Catholic priest, am being asked, does the Catholic Church permit any room for such an intervention, that parents would support their child, their dependent child, in undertaking, the answer is no.
Have you had, you've been a priest for, you said 10 years? I've lost track. Is this a conversation that happens often? And have you had many of these conversations with parents or trying to navigate this?
I can say that in my first 8 years of priesthood, I confronted this once. And in the last 2 years, I have lost track.
Really?
That's just my absolute experience. I can't deny how I have experienced things. I will never forget the first time I had this conversation with a parent, and that was going back 7 years ago. But inside of 8 years of being a priest, that was the one and only time I had this conversation. And then now, as I said, in the last 2 years, maybe two and a half, I'll even give it 3 years, I couldn't tell you the number of times I am asked about this or confront this conversation. Or now that I'm a university chaplain and working so frequently on different campuses, having this conversation with students themselves, who now, not as children in their parental home, but as at least adults, are wrestling with what decision to make in their life.
That really does surprise me, the acceleration. I suspected, I mean, I did ask earlier, I suspected there was an acceleration, but I didn't expect you to answer that way. And Janelle and I, in terms of our online apostolate, we have been increasingly getting these types of questions. And so I'm just wondering what happened in the last 2 years that all of a sudden causes an acceleration of this issue.
Like, well, you brought it up already. I think, like, we've been going through the COVID pandemic restrictions. Yeah. Children have spent an incalculable amount of time online, either because there was nothing else for them to do or anywhere else for them to go, or because their entire educational structure had to be moved online. And I can only imagine that for parents who have to work, a lot of that must be unsupervised, where you just assume that my child is online learning and doing this through school, and I imagine they're doing whatever they have to be doing. Not to knock the platform that's hosting this conversation right now, but there is a wide range of content found on here. Not everybody's looking up Catholic Minute videos, and who knows what children are either directly because of what they're studying in school, or just because they happen to be spending countless hours a day on YouTube, what they're finding. And I think in a moment of confusion and distress in a child's life, which another way of calling that is puberty, no one goes through a time in their life where they're not burdened and angsty and distressed and feel uncomfortable with themselves and ask uncomfortable questions without satisfactory answers. When now you have some detached, anonymous, kind of invisible community where you're being flooded with recommendations or proposals about how you might handle the situation you currently find yourself in. I don't know how else to account for what we're seeing at this time than that.
Wow. Well, thank you for weighing in on this. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. It's a heavy, emotionally charged situation. We hope this conversation is a blessing to those who have tuned in. Do you have a final word, or is what we said good?
Well, I just want to speak again as we began with the parents. As much as I've told you that you need to show your children you love them and receive them, despite whatever difficulty they bring to you, so does your mother, the church, love you as parents and encourage you and not judge or condemn you, because no one can understand the difficulty that you face in the different things that your children bring before you, but to just know that you have a singular opportunity to impact the life of your child by reflecting to them the love that I can only hope and pray as a priest has been reflected to you from the church. So I hope that brings some comfort and encouragement.